Shalom to Yehudim, shalom to Bnei Noach, shalom to Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Yud Dalas B'Sivan, Parashas Shlach Lecha, Tavshinayin Vav, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 19 June 2016. Webcasting from the State of Israel, whose early icons are coming to the end of their days. The icon of the Sabra, the born-in-Palestine Jew, raised to be a socialist, a farmer, a soldier. No more of that religion stuff. For those who might not know, the Sabra is the name of a mini edible cactus, all prickly on the outside, soft and mushy on the inside. The hero of Leon Uris' bestseller book Exodus was Ari Ben Kanan. Interesting choice of name, for in fact, in the first years of the new state, there was a circle of intellectuals who called themselves Canaanites, meaning, yes, their home is here, and they fought for it against the Arabs, but not as Jews. Ben Kanan is the son of the Canaanites. These early hard-left Israeli intellectuals declared their divorce from Jews outside of Israel. They were Canaanites. Moshe Dayan was the first baby born in the first kibbutz, who grew up to be a fearless soldier for whom religion was nonsense. And interestingly, on the last page of his autobiography, in a separate section, his last words, related one of his archaeological finds, the tomb of someone who was buried before Abraham came from Ur HaZdim. It was that old. Dayan said he looked at the bones and identified with the man who surely called this land his homeland, and he probably loved his homeland as a normal person loves his homeland, as Moshe Dayan loves this homeland. But of course, none of that Jew stuff. Dayan was saying indirectly he too was a Canaanite. His son Asaf crowed that he had never once set foot in a synagogue and never would. In Exodus, Leon Uris took a swipe or two himself from time to time at the rabbis of the Jews in history who retarded them with their superstitions. Interesting, too, that in his historical romance, the love story within Israel's War of Independence is between Ali Ben Kanan and a lovely American Christian nurse. Uris himself married a non-Jewess. The whole story is about assimilating Jews. The 20-somethings who fought and died in the Israeli War of Independence were the heroes of the Jewish community here at the time. Like Ari Ben Kanan, their leaders were overwhelmingly from communes, kibbutzim, and collective villages, moshavim. They never constituted more than 5% of the population, more often only around 3%, but they were the elite, they were the ruling class. They were the officers in the IDF, the pilots, the politicians in the government, the National Labor Union called the Histadrut. They ran the country. And not surprisingly, they felt it was their country more than anybody else's. And I remember when their rule came to an end after 30 years in 1977. Israelis in the ruling elite that evening were slack-jawed and dumbfounded when the election results showed Menachem Begin had won. They couldn't believe that. He was this weirdo from way back when. Well, flash forward to this week, and we're seeing more and more eruptions, I think, of the last of the kibbutz generation squawking at the reality of their sinking into the quicksand of history. When Deputy Chief of Staff Yair Golan said what he said on Holocaust Remembrance Day, he was only in character as a ranking officer in the IDF, whose ethos, whose atmosphere was molded by the generation of 1948. These are Jews who were raised to dismiss the Jewish religion as foolishness. And as for the Holocaust, well, it could have happened to anybody, given the right circumstances. In a way, theirs is a denial of the lunatic anti-Semitism that fueled the ovens at Auschwitz. Sabras like these were raised to believe that they were Israelis and not Jews, and therefore anti-Semitism did not concern them. And in the right circumstances, you too could become Nazis. That was the message on Holocaust Remembrance Day. We're not, in other words, the chosen people. We're normal people. In the uproar that followed Yair Golan's remarks, then Defense Minister Yalon supported him. And the Prime Minister rebuked both of them, rightly so. I mean, you want to express your views on political and cultural things? Fine. Take off your uniform. Because when you wear it, you have no right to express your opinions on such matters. Which brings me to the top story here since last Thursday. At the annual Herzliya Security Conference, Ehud Barak, now sporting a thick black beard, delivered a few words on security, but a torrent of them, impugning the leadership of the Prime Minister. It was a rant of sentences of unrestrained bile. If there was a Jewish Nobel Prize for Lashon Hara, evil speech, it goes to Ehud Barak. He grew up in a commune of atheists, who never wore jackets and ties as too bourgeois. They created for themselves a classless society and produced, not surprisingly, men with no class, like Ehud Barak. His vocabulary was off the charts in his delivery in the speech. He accused the government of being taken over, chatuf in Hebrew, kidnapped by a, quote, fanatical core of extreme ideologues. The prime minister, he said, Hitlerizes every foreign threat. And at the end, he said, not once, not twice, but three times, fascism. He used the word three times to describe the current state of politics in Israel. He was simply hysterical in this torrent of accusations. And another facet of his having no class was being oblivious to the implicit slap in the face to the people of Israel who went to the polls and voted for this right-wing government led by Bibi Netanyahu. He painted the portrait of a situation that simply does not exist. He made it sound as if there had been a coup d'etat by these extreme radical fanatics, when it is a government that is no more, no less reflective of the people of Israel than any other. This is what the electorate voted for 15 months ago. And Ehud Barak barking that the government in place is a fascist junta, more or less, is just an insult to the electorate. And in keeping with this perversion of reality, he's oblivious to his own voice as the voice of the army, he and Yalon and Golan, who think the civilian government isn't good enough and is corrupt. Shades of some colonels in some third world banana republic plotting a coup. What Barak said sounded as if he was calling for a civil uprising in his words, then quickly added, and the ballot box, his first preference, though, was for that civil uprising. He had to go on television the next day to walk back his remarks a bit for that. I think his behavior, and that of Yalon as well, who now wants his own party, because he was humiliated by Bibi, who, by the way, did not grow up in the leftist ruling class. Yalon sided with Golan, for he too sees the army, like Barak, as the backbone of modern Israel, which has more than a military role, but a molder of the spirit of the new Jew. Yalon experienced his rebuke from Bibi as denying him the right to believe in the ethos of the IDF, and that is his world. In a word, last Thursday in Herzliya, Ehud Barak went ballistic against the prime minister. As far as I saw in the reports of his incendiary speech, he was in high classical leftist dudgeon because Netanyahu and his camp have attacked the Supreme Court, he said, attacked freedom of expression, the media's independence, the state controller, the attorney general, senior officials in the IDF, the Shin Bet and police, the antitrust regulator and others. Israeli democracy, he said, is threatened by the NGO law, the suspension of MK's law for anti-Jew incitement, separate transportation for Jews and Arabs in the West Bank, and the attempt to apply Israeli law to Jewish settlers in the West Bank. Laundry list from Ehud Barak. It's interesting how we settlers are forever referred to as Jewish settlers, never Israeli settlers. Not that I mind, it's just another moment for reflecting on the society that Ehud Barak grew up in, a commune of socialists who sneered at the Jewish religion. These are Israelis who would tell you they were Israelis and not Jews. This is the latest hysterical outburst by him and Yalon, still the kibbutznik. Barak is a multimillionaire who lives in the poshest penthouse in Tel Aviv. It's just another spasm, I think, in the death rattle of the generation of the Sabras, these farmer, soldier, atheist, socialists of yore and legend. They've become a dying breed here. Their ideology, their thoughts, their values made sense in the past, but no longer do. They sense their impending doom, I think, and are not happy about that. Tefila le'ani
בתוך זיכרון השם שמעה תפילתי ושבתי אליך תבוא אוי אל תסתר פניך
Yes, the age of Ari Ben-Kanan in Israel is slipping beneath the waves of history, and as his cohort leaves this world, we see tyrannical Stalinism inherent in the socialist dream. Barak attacked the right for their attacks, as he called them, on the Supreme Court, on NGOs, separate transportation of Jews and Arabs in Judea and Samaria, as if he believes all these institutions are sacred cows above criticism. Leftists like him experience criticism of their views as illegitimate and tantamount to inciting the people to murder them. Criticism of the Supreme Court is unacceptable in the mind of Ehud Barak, and that's because it is a leftist clique. He attacked Netanyahu for not pursuing peace with the Palestinians and of having a secret agenda of leading the country to a one-state solution in which Israel becomes an apartheid state, close quote. And this is where this crude, classless man's lack of class crosses the line from bad taste to treason for providing ammunition to Israel's enemies. Every clack of anti-Semites on university campuses who organize Israel apartheid weeks will be pleased to read this quote from Ehud Barak from last Thursday, linking Israel to apartheid, just like Jimmy Carter in the title of his book. What a jackass this Barak is. And then he evidently tied off his rant at the podium by claiming that democracy is being eroded by the government and, quote, the roots of fascism have taken hold in this government. If it looks like the roots of fascism and walks like the roots of fascism and barks like the roots of fascism, then it's the roots of fascism, close quote. On one level, I'm angry that a Jew could be so uneducated as to think Israel's polity is like Mussolini's Italy or Franco's Spain. On another level, I find it virtually surreal that a former prime minister of Israel, defense minister, foreign minister, could be so oblivious to the damage he does to this country with talk like this. Every anti-Semite in the world will latch onto his words as proof Israel is a fascist apartheid state. Is that what he wants? I think I remarked on my belief that for all the greatness in the state of Israel reborn, one major and important deficit of the return from the diaspora has been the loss here of Jews like Barak with some understanding of the Gentiles and the still powerful role of irrational Jew hatred still out there. In using these words, fascists and apartheid, he in effect pays his respects to those who make those accusations around the globe. The Zionism is Racism UN General Assembly resolution of 1975, remember, was formally annulled in 1991, but that meant nothing. It remains the backbone of all Israel haters. Jewish nationalism is racist because the Jews are a race and won't let other races share in the Holy Land, which is holy to the three great monotheistic religions. The Jews are racist, greedy racists whose very nature drives them to oppress and humiliate the ancient Palestinians, whose ancient land the Jews stole from them. Barak's tirade was pathetic. The Likud Party's formal statement in response said, and right on target, the left wing is simply unwilling to accept the fact that the Likud is the ruling party. To that end, all is fair, including harming Israel's security interests. The government of Israel has not been hijacked. It was elected by the people. It's strange that the very people who praise democracy can't understand it, close quote. And I see in this a case of psychological projection. Here was Barak calling for a civil uprising, in his words, as because the government has been overrun by extremist fascists, fanatics. He's calling for a coup d'etat. No, it's the same government that people voted for 15 months ago. What is he talking about? Well, Likud is right in saying the left is unwilling to accept the people prefer Likud over the remnants of the old Mapai labor movement, the mafia of Ben-Gurion and Golda Meir and Moshe Dayan, etc. They lost power in 1977. They returned to power in 1992, but then brought down on the country the nightmare years of the Second Intifada. Indeed, in the brief 2 years that Ehud Barak was prime minister, who, like his forebears, Rabin and Peres, tried to make a deal with Arafat, only ghetto Jews like these kibbutzniks, who never lived in the real world, would make a deal with Arafat. In the real world, no sober and successful person would ever go into business with that slime, seeing him a potential partner for a win-win peace deal. Arafat was lowlife. He was a poisonous reptile in the form of a man. Only such country bumpkins as these communards would think it a good idea to go into business with Arafat as a peace partner. Like all leftists, they have no judgment of the human personality. Last week, I think the day before he was in Herzliya, Barak was in New York, sounding pretty much the same way at a staged gab fest at Central Synagogue of Manhattan, on stage with Dennis Ross, where he said that he supported reaching an agreement with the Palestinians as soon as possible. And if a deal is not reached, Israel could become another South Africa. Said it then, too. What a jerk. What a schmuck. Like Oshrat Kutler, she's an anchor woman on Israeli TV, who said on Friday night, in praise of a musician who lives in Yitzhak, overlooking Shem, a settlement, she said he knows how to sing, how to compose, and direct, and There's no doubt he is a sane settler, she said. Of course, there was a howl of protest at her obnoxious remark. She was called on the carpet by the management and apologized, but like the Zionism is racism solution, it can be formally annulled but never deleted. Her obnoxious remark was further evidence of the ruling class in Israel's journalism and entertainment. In her mind, all 500,000 Jews living on formerly Arab, illegally occupied territory that the League of Nations assigned to the Jews are insane, except for this one singer, Oshrat Cutler, soul sister of Ehud Barak. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. There was an interesting, depressing piece in Makor Rishon on Friday about the headless and useless anti-terror behavior of the Obama administration. In France, last November 13, after the horror at the Bataclan Club and the surrounding cafes and restaurants, 130 murdered, France's Ministry of the Interior decided to zero in and put under surveillance known mosque preaching violence. In Brussels, likewise, after the March 22nd horror at the airport and a metro station, the Prime Minister there did the same thing, put incendiary mosques under surveillance. But in the States, the Obama administration is not doing that. I think the New York Police Department used to have a very useful operation like that, which did good work and caught guys ahead of time, but it was forced to suspend such intelligence operations. Political correctness likewise stopped the neighbors in San Bernardino from reporting the suspicious activities of their Muslim neighbors, who went on to murder, what, 17 people? 14 people? And there was Obama last week claiming the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States extends to protect aliens overseas, whose culture produces everywhere undemocratic regimes. And then this wicked man went down to Orlando and again shook his finger at the availability of weapons in the U.S. as the problem, and not the Muslim maniacs who use them. The Macaulay Schoen piece covered the Clarion Project, whose emails I get, and now I'm going to make a contribution to them. They seem to be a serious effort doing what the government is not doing. They're keeping track of every mosque in the U.S. There's some 3,000 now. Every state has some of them. Every state. Rather, if I understood the article correctly, there are federal agencies monitoring these mosques, but they're forbidden by Obama and company of making their findings public. Scores of these mosques are home to firebrand preachers who preach the gospel of Muhammad, who was arguably, aside from the professional executioners in Saudi Arabia, the greatest head chopper in history. In other words, Islam is penetrating the U.S., and all thanks to Obama, who has imported about a million of these people. A couple of years ago, I was at Kennedy Airport, set to board a flight for Tel Aviv, and there was a delay, as usual, which kept me hours waiting there and looking on as the terminal teemed with Muslims, hundreds of them. Not a happy prospect. This character Obama, in his haughty, sneering argument against saying radical Islam, made no sense when accusing those who make the demand of smearing an entire religion when the exact opposite is true. By speaking out against radical Islam, he isolates and defends and protects the non-violent ones. One protects the bulk of these Muslims from the charge of criminal terror by using the term radical Islam. And then Obama hears a blanket criticism of Islam as a whole in this demand reveals how his mind works. He's distorting the reality. He's hearing his own worst nightmare. People accusing him of being a Muslim traitor in the United States, which is what he is. If he were smarter and perhaps less panicked, he might embrace the term radical Islam in order to protect the bulk of his fellow believers in the one true faith. But he does not. In true totalitarian fashion, like Stalinist Ehud Barak, criticism of one's religion is unacceptable. How dare Israelis on the right object to the decisions of the court, and how dare anyone not like Islam? How dare the Knesset, in the mind of Ehud Barak, pass legislation against NGOs financed by foreigners to smear and slander his country?
לא יישא גוי אל גוי חרב, ולא ילמדו עוד מלחמה. לא יישא גוי אל גוי חרב, ולא ילמדו עוד מלחמה. יישג, לא יישג. ולא ילמדו עוד מלחמה, ולא ילמדו עוד מלחמה.
Okay, that's it for this first hot night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Meretz Yisrael.